All right, so we're in CLR world. We have a niner in front of the camera. Introduce yourself. Who are you?
Yeah, my name is Emil Langberg. I'm a PM intern this year in the CLR team, which is really cool. I mean, anybody who, you know, considers applying as an intern for Microsoft should definitely do it. It's an awesome experience.
Excellent.
Just getting the interviews is for itself is just a fun thing.
So the actual interview before you get accepted as
exactly.
What was that like?
Well, it was quite competitive. I mean, from what I remember, the numbers are we have this year around about 2,000 interns here at Microsoft, and only 50 of them are actually international interns. So international means non-North America, so non-Canadian, non-Mexican, not United States person. And I think they had roughly 1,400 applications for it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, lots of resume scanning, lots of phone interviews. And I had one phone interview, and 3 real-world interviews in Warsaw. Mm-hmm. And then during that interview, the dev manager of the CLR said, well, maybe you should re-interview as a PM position, because you only interviewed for SDET, which is Software Design Engineer and Test, and Software Design Engineer, which is basically the developer part.
Yes.
And then they said, well, maybe you just want to be a PM. I mean, and then I had, you know, a very long phone interview with 3 persons from the CLR team, mm-hmm. all PMs. Mm-hmm. Talked, I think, for almost 4 hours with them on the phone.
Wow.
Yep. And then I got accepted.
So let me ask you this before we get into that, because you've done some amazing stuff this summer. We're going to definitely dig into what you've been working on. But so take us through a little bit, because, you know, a lot of Niners have asked questions like, how do I do internships?
Yeah.
And, you know, the first thing is obviously you have to want to do an internship at Microsoft. A lot of smart people. It's probably a good idea, whether or not you work here or not. In the end, who cares? But how did you, like, when you first said, I want to be an intern at Microsoft, did you want to be a dev? I mean, what went through your mind? What did you want to be?
Yeah, I want to be a dev. I mean, probably most people would just think about the dev role when they think about internships at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Because I think Microsoft is a very unique portfolio of roles that you can pick here. I mean, the PM role is just one of them mm-hmm. that you probably know, because everybody who makes presentations is probably a PM, or is very likely that they're a PM, so mm-hmm. you at least know the name. But you have no clue what the title actually means. You're not a programmer, you're not a manager, something completely different. And I mean, the tester is completely different. I think most people, when they heard the term tester, think about, you know, monkey sitting in front of the keyboard, just hacking around and mm-hmm. try to crash the application. But it's not that black. I mean, the title Software Design Engineer in Test mm-hmm. shows you clearly what they are. They are developers specializing in actually testing applications.
Absolutely.
Test automation. So most people probably are better testers than developers, but they don't even know it, because you have to be, you know, very creative and very destructive about things. But that's not, you know, I really like creating things out of thin air, and in that case you probably are a better developer or a PM.
Okay.
So I applied for the dev, but apparently I'm not too code focused to be really a dev. I mean, I always used to be a dev, because mm-hmm. most people are just devs. Mm-hmm. Outside of Microsoft, but I always enjoy talking to people, finding out what is the right feature and what is the actual application, what we really want to build.
Absolutely.
Not how it's built, but what. It's more about the what. And that is actually what the program manager is doing. He tries mm-hmm. to ensure that the right product is built.
Excellent. And I mean, for someone like you, I mean, you know, not all PMs at Microsoft are necessarily technical, because they didn't all come from a developer background.
Definitely.
Since you're coming from a developer background, you're actually probably going to write your own prototypes. You're going to understand how the system works, and what you hand off to a dev team isn't going to be, you know, so full of shit, excuse my language, that the dev's like, get out of here, man.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense. I can't do that.
Yeah.
You got to ship this thing.
Exactly.
So you'll be much more constrained, and of course, most PMs at Microsoft are excellent.
Yeah.
That's probably all of them.
Yeah.
And your woman that you work with, Sarupa, is definitely a star, right?
Yeah.
The NGen team.
Exactly.
So we said the NGen word. So that's what you've been working on. You
exactly.
came to work with, she was on Channel 9.
Yeah.
Told us all about NGen and what they're doing in the next release.
Exactly.
And so you've come and actually have created something else. Can you tell us what you've been working on? I mean, you can, actually.
Yeah, I can. And
feel free to speak up. It's no worries.
Yeah. Just one disclaimer, it's nothing that will ship soon. I mean,
that's fine.
It's something that we are thinking about more about what we could do in the future. So everything I sell now probably will change, and when it ships, we don't know. So,
Said, look, man.
Yeah.
Said like a PM, bro.
Thanks.
You already have the PM stuff down.
And so what we are actually, I mean, most of you will probably know what Engine is, but I will just recap it to make sure that we speak the same language. So the basic problem with .NET is that we have a JIT compiler, so that means everything that you execute has to be compiled down to real executable code, because we ship IL images which are not executable.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that you know, it takes time. I mean, there's no ideal point in time. So what we do, when you execute a method, the runtime will check, do I have native code for it? No, I don't, then I will create native code for it. And it has certain downsides, like it takes time. And the other problem that we actually have is that it's impossible to share the JITted native code across applications.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that every application that executes, you know, your application will have its own private copy of that thing in memory. And so we invented Engine years ago. I think from the very first beginning, Engine was actually part of the framework. And the whole framework itself is Engine, so not everybody has its own private copy of, you know, system.tostream or something like that. It's not really that way. But for your own applications, you can also use Engine and create native images. The only question is, when do you generate the native images? And right now, the constraint is that you have to have a setup for it. Because the problem is that the native images must be stored somewhere. And we have a concept called a machine-wide native image cache, which is stored somewhere under C Windows assembly.
Okay.
And not everybody can write there. I mean, that would be terrible. So you have to have an elevated process that can write there. So that's hurdle number one. You have to be elevated. And the second hurdle is you have to explicitly tell Engine, please produce native images. We don't do it for you automatically in the background. So that means the ideal thing of doing that is a setup, right? I mean, the setup can easily elevate. You can create native images during installation. And when you uninstall, you just delete them. So that's the basic workflow. But when you look at the first technical, you know, promises about what .NET will be, everybody was telling you, you can xcopy deploy your applications, you can just copy your thing over the, you know, from the USB stick to the hard drive and just run the application. And it's true, you can. But in that case, you don't have native images for your application, you just have native images for the framework that are already installed on the machine.
Sure.
So, and now we try to, you know, we try to figure out what could we do, how could it look like if we would remove these limitations. And our feature is called Non-Admin Engine, which
okay.
is, you know, kind of boring name. I just invented the name Your Grandmother's Engine to, you know, someone underline what the actual perception will be, that it's just more automatic, but it not, you know, it doesn't describe the feature too well, so we dropped the name. But I mean, should I draw something?
Yes, draw pictures.
I mean, so the basic idea is if you have. I think red is not too well, right? I remember this.
Yeah, correctly. black will be good. The darker the better. Black or blue.
Black. So when we think about, you have an application like foo.exe. Let's look at the foo.exe process, which you have foo.exe that has a dependency on bar.dll. So that is what I'm not going to describe is actually the our idea how the feature will look like in the future. So it's
okay.
It's not exactly how it works today. Just to be clear of that. I just drew a few things in order to have some things I can point to. So what we think about TripTestable is that's the non-admin engine idea. So if we think about your process, when your process actually starts, you're trying to execute code that is in foo.exe and that has a dependency on bar.dll. So right in your process, there's another component that we call the CLR, which actually is responsible for all the magic things behind the scenes. And what we now try to do is actually we want to support Engine for your process. And right now the idea is that we have a native image cache for your application. So it's not the machine wide NIC, it's an application specific native image cache here. So what will now happen is when you try to execute foo.exe, the CLR will detect that and say, well, let's see if we have a native image in our app local image cache. And as you can see, there are no images right now. So the CLR will just say, okay, that's fine. We don't have one, so just, you know, use the JIT to execute the application, but the execution can continue. But in the background, it will create an engine compilation worker process that actually will produce the native image for you and place it here. So during the runtime of your application, we will just create the native images for you in the background.
Excellent.
So, and the same happens with bar.dll as well. So when this the first time will be needed, we will just create this one and store it there. And so they are produced by the worker process. And so when the next time is, you know, when your process actually starts, the TLL will just find, oh, we have one, so it will use this one and it will use this one. And that means that you have actually, you know, engined your application basically by just executing your application. That's,
cool.
That's the whole idea of it. So there are, you know, lots of interesting questions right now. I mean, where do we store the application local image cache? Where will it happen? And I can just give you a short sketch of what we think about that. It's just like when you imagine you have your application somewhere on DTools, let's say foo, and under this you have, you know, your foo.dxc, you have your bar.dll, and you also have foo.exe.config, and you have a new folder, native images, with some content. And the basic idea is that this folder doesn't exist when you just copy your application from the USB stick, for example,
mm-hmm.
and you start your application, then the process I just described to you will happen, and then we will place the native images here under this folder called native images. And the structure of that folder, you can think of, it's just a black box. It's a database, so to speak, because typically you end up with having multiple images for the same IL, so we have some fancy lookup rules for it to just find it, for example, debugging and profiling on different images. And there are magic things in the runtime that make sure that everything just works. And now, I mean, if you just copy the whole thing to a different machine, including the native images, given that the runtimes are identical, we would just use those native images and we would not produce them anymore. If they become invalid because you have a different runtime, you have a different version of MS Color, we will just update them.
Great.
So it's still better to just copy them together with your application if you have, you know, the additional space, because the native images tend to be a little bit smaller. I think a little bit is a little understatement. It's roughly three times the size of an IL image, so it can be quite large. But the idea is then, if you imagine you have a centralized IT department, for example, you really can create your tools, write them on a USB stick, and just walk from machine to machine, just double-click them from the USB stick, and have support for native images. It would be impossible with our current engine idea.
Great.
Yeah, that's the basic idea.
It's cool. I mean, of course, you run into some challenges when you deal with versioning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously the smarts of the CLR will say, well, I have the signature, but it's a different version, so I'm going to delete the native image that's in the image folder, replace it with the one that's new. Then there's the complexities that we talked with Sarupa about in our interview about what they are delivering for .NET 4, which is how to make Engine a little bit smarter with changing pieces of images as opposed to blowing everything up and redoing it all. Very cool. I mean, I think I get why it's non-admin, because you're using that name because you don't have to be running an elevated process.
Exactly. So it's, you could also call it automatic engine because it automatically happens.
That's a better name. Auto engine.
I mean, the interesting thing is, like, this feature will not replace our engine settings that we have today. It will just be a complement for that, because there are still scenarios in which you will really, you know, because the images are then local to the app. So that means if you have, you know, 13 apps, and even if the apps would share bar.dll, each of one would have its own private copy of that. So, for example, when you think about scenarios like Terminal Server, where you have, you know, hundreds of users probably on the same machine executing the same app, you really want to share the native images. Otherwise, if these are different file names, you can't share them in memory due to how Windows actually maintains the DLLs there. And there are lots of restrictions for that, that you would still want to use the traditional engine thing.
Mm-hmm.
But for smaller applications or for applications that you really move from machine to machine, having everything self-contained with your application provides huge benefits.
Sure.
And yeah, it's just a different set of scenarios, and there are certain restrictions that you have to be aware of. So it's not, I mean, automating engine has the, it sounds like everything is now magic and it's done in the background. You don't have to care anymore. That's,
sure.
that's not going to happen. If you are the developer of the application, you still have to decide, you know, want I have a, do I want to have a setup? Do I want to support Xcopy? Do I want to support terminal services? And these are the trade-offs you have to make. So it's not really automatic in the sense that, you know, poof, it just magically happens. You have to decide what. But
sure.
if you, I mean, that's why there's a config file. You have to explicitly opt into that feature.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not if you're, you know, running your favorite application today or the latest version of the framework then.
Yeah.
It will not produce native images for it. You have to explicitly say, okay, I want to, you know, use that feature. And you can also specify the name for that location.
So, I mean, I guess one could ask, I mean, the question I would ask you is, I mean, the reason that the native image is so much bigger than the actual footprint of the EXE is because it contains the whole base class lock. All of the necessary libraries that are required to run this application are all in that native image, right?
Well, I'm not sure whether I understand it completely. So it's not that, you know, foo.exe and bar.dll would contain the native code for things that are in the runtime. These images would just contain the native code for code that is actually contained in that file. You can, I mean, if there's, for example, there's some inlining going on, maybe inline methods from the runtime,
yeah.
then you will also contain that code here.
Sure.
But it's not that, you know, you could just leave the runtime and just execute this over here. That won't work, because you would still need MS callout in the runtime.
Absolutely.
So the thing why they are bigger is because basically the native images also contain all the metadata, so it's basically a copy of that over here. Including the IL, I think, even the IL, because you can use reflection, you know, to actually get a pointer to the native image, to the IL, and really want to make sure if you have an IL, if you have a native image, that we do not touch the IL image anymore, because that would be a waste of time, because then you would, you know, access both images. But this is part of a bigger problem. We really, you know, are working with that to reduce the sizes there.
Mm. So, I mean, the question I would ask, though, is. One of the reasons that you engen things, I mean, there's one reason why you engen things as a developer of an application, and that is to speed up your application's for initial experience, the launch of your app.
Exactly.
When you have to sit and wait, and you double-click on Visual Studio, and you're waiting for 20 seconds...
That's not too pleasing.
No, you're like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
So if I made foo.exe that used bar.dll and boz.dll, it was a teeny little app that didn't do very much. In some sense, because you already have the DLR, the CLR is already engined on your machine, the base class library is already engined on your machine, it's going to load pretty fast.
Exactly.
So you have to think, hey, man, I wrote a lot of code. I might have a big application with lots of libraries. I mean, that makes sense. So, I mean, developers will figure out when this makes sense. And the CLR should be smart about the fact that, you know, because the CLR is going to have to do extra work, but it's going to be done in the background. But nevertheless, I mean, if I had this application that you have on the board, the CLR maybe in the future could be like, why would I want to do this? Just because you told me to? It doesn't really make sense, but sure, I'll spin up another thread and do this for you in the background,
exactly.
But whatever, dude. I mean, there has to be some way to let developers know that, why are you want to convert this to a native image and host it locally with your binaries? But developers are smart, like you, right? We get it. We figure, okay, I got a big app, I want it to load fast, boom. So what were some of the challenges of actually pulling this off?
Yeah, there are lots of challenges that you can imagine. I mean, one is that, I mean, you said it's the speed of application. That's one aspect of what engine provides. The other one is actually sharing the code in the memory, which can be challenging.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of ASP.NET and shared hosting, where you have, you know, hundreds of applications running on that machine, really want to share images, right? I mean, you don't want to have that everyone is just using its own private copy of .NET Nuke. But today, that's exactly what's happening there, because it's not easy for ASP.NET to actually figure out, well, what are the common parts of it, and then factoring them out into native images. So what I showed you is just the, from that engine, is just what will happen for standalone applications. I didn't told you about what hosting scenarios we actually host the field are. Mm. But this is also a feature that we will expose to hosts, like for example Visual Studio used to be a host. Right now most of them is actually written in managed code, so they're probably not hosting anymore, but SQL Server is hosting the CLR, SilverLight is a host of the CLR, and these are, you know, also things you want to give to hosts to decide what is their policy. That's our double-click EXE policy that the framework ships. Mm. But for ASP.NET and for SilverLight, you could imagine having a different policy, right? I mean, for SilverLight, we have the in-browser applications, we have out-of-browser applications, and they might have their own policy, just like, well, how many storage do you want to, you know, to actually use for native images? You don't want to waste, you know, the whole hard drive, because just you're browsing the web and the CLR is generating lots of native images that you probably never use anymore.
Sure.
So there are policies that are specific to the host that we want to support as well. Mm. And the other one is, if you think about SQL, it's also about security, because what I've drawn here with the engine compilation worker process, you really don't want to have a situation in which, because you could also imagine that we store all the native images in the machine-wide image cache.
Yeah.
But this would require that your application that runs, you know, with your personal credentials and not having admin credentials will actually indirectly spin off a worker process that would have admin credentials and actually store the images. So if we have, you know, certain bugs in our engine compilation worker, you could imagine attacking them and exploit a buffer overrun and then execute code in the admin context, mm-hmm. which you certainly don't want to have if you just browse the web, right? And,
sure.
And these are the constraints you have. You basically have to make sure that you do not expose, you know, new attack surface to what we already have.
Well, I mean, as you were saying that, I was thinking, hey, you know, what happens with those native images, they just get executed,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, that's machine gook.
Exactly.
So it's x86, it's x64, whatever, it's machine
exactly.
junk. That just get executed. There's no sort of semantics about, hey, can I run this? Can I understand what this is trying to do? So if someone just, you had foo.exe, you double-clicked on it, and the CLR is like, well, I see that there's a native image here, so I'm not going to fire up the JIT, I'm just going to say, execute this processor. However, that native image could be nothing at all to do with foo.exe if somebody put that there.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, I just installed a Trojan horse, or I, you know, even worse, I'm running a rootkit on your kernel now, depending upon what process you're running. But you get my point.
Exactly.
So you're right. It is another attack surface here, but you'll figure that out.
Yeah. I mean, our basic policy here is that, I mean, the problem we have today with managed code is the whole idea of having ILs that you can look at it and you can verify it. You have type safety, you
totally.
Have, you know, a lot of things there. And the problem is, if you think about code access security, it's just like, we would like to introduce new security concepts on top of managed code. And that's one of the problems with native images, because native images just run with the permission of the user that's actually invoking it. So it's running probably with, or it could run with more rights that you actually have specified by our code access security policies, because a native image does not match what's actually contained in the IL, because we can't validate, then we can just validate the IL. Mm-hmm. And currently there is no way to verify that a native image really belongs to that, mm-hmm. to that thing. But, I mean, we are not making it any worse with native application, because if you just launch native application and your user has, you know, delete permissions for your documents, mm-hmm. you trust the application that it doesn't delete your document when you start it. That's what's happening with native code. And for example, one of the things that we removed, I think, in .NET 3.5 SP1 was the constraint, if you launch a managed application from a network share, that it got different code access security permissions as if you would have launched from a desktop.
Mm.
But that's not the case with native applications. So we removed it because it was just in the people's way to actually use, you know, applications on the network share.
Mm.
And I think that's here the same. I mean, code access security makes sense in certain scenarios, and in that scenarios, we really have to make sure that we really, you know, do not allow that someone can tamper the native images. For example, with SilverLight, it's almost impossible, because you can write a host that actually stores the images somewhere else, and then you, as a developer of SilverLight editing, cannot tamper with your native images.
Cool.
So, that's
and of course, in this case, you could have just the CLR part of the worker process. The CLR could, like, create a hash or do something such that, you know, if
and then have sort of a hash map so that if somebody did replace one of your native image files, when it did, when you did click on food.exe, it would map and say, no, this is not recognizable, and throw a security error, or just kill the process.
Yeah, the only problem with that approach is whether you store the hash. Because if you store the hash at the same location, then you can tamper the image and...
Yeah, you'd have to store it in the global. But you're right, because then that does away with the concept of admin, but it's just a lookup for the CLR into an admin-protected global store. It'd be like, let me see this, let's map it. But of course, that's processing.
Yeah. Right?
So then we get into this whole how fast can it be done game.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's cool that you came in and as an intern and saw a problem and said, okay, I'm going to figure out a solution. I'm going to PM the solution. So what does that mean exactly now that you were a PM? You PM the solution. So you came up with the idea, so the vision, and then what happened? Take us through how you actually PM'd this.
Yeah, when I joined the team 3 months ago, it was like they already knew that they had the problem. They wanted to attack that, mm-hmm. and I said, "Well, we have certain ideas how you could circumvent or actually eliminate all the obstacles that we have there." And then my basic task was actually to speak with all the different stakeholders that we have, like the Silverlight team, the SQL team, the ASP.NET team, and Visual Studio, to see what are your requirements on that. Do you need certain features there, and what do you want to have at the end? And then I try to figure out what are the mechanics that you have to put in place to make that magic happen. Hmm. And then what you basically do is you create a Word document. You create a specification where you actually say, well, these are the requirements, these are the non-requirements. So, like, for example, one of the non-requirements was, well, we are not making Engine obsolete, so you still have to know why do you want to use Engine and when do you want to use Engine. So that's basically also a part of the PM work, to clearly sketch, okay, what are the problems I'm not going to solve here? Mm-hmm. To really draw a line and say, okay, that's contained in my problem space, but that's not contained in my problem space anymore. Mm. And then you're basically writing the spec. You have review meetings where actually all the smart people that we have, like Patrick Dessoud, for example, can comment on that and say, well, did you also think about this problem over here and this problem over there? Mm-hmm. And I talk to security testers that say, well, if you do this over here and pull it from here down there, then you can actually exploit something over here. And then you get really an impression what's like, writing code for Microsoft, because you have to understand not just your feature, but also your impact from your feature to the overall system.
Absolutely.
That's challenging. But there's also kind of the fun experience, because if it would be easy, it would be boring, right? I mean, the cool thing here is that you have lots of tough problems by lots of smart people, and that makes it really, really cool.
Totally. Well, and not just smart, but I mean people with lots of experience. And
exactly.
Somebody like Patrick Dessoud, the technical fellow.
Yeah.
And he was, one of the people who created the concept of managed code at Microsoft. Anyway.
He has written garbage collectors before I was born.
And he's a nice guy too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's cool. I mean, you get to work with them, you get their advice, and you'll, of course, learn. I mean, it seems to be one of the things about being a PM, and I've never been a PM. I mean, they wouldn't let me be a PM, probably. is you have to be diplomatic.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You can't walk into a meeting and say, listen, this is how it's going to be.
Yeah.
You're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Shut the hell up. It will never work that way. It doesn't matter what your level is. It doesn't matter what your seniority is. Unless, of course, I think, some VPs could get away with that. But the average plebe can't.
Exactly.
But that's really exciting. So what's next for you, man?
Yeah, what's next? So, unfortunately, I have to return to Germany before I can join the team.
So you're going to join the team?
Yeah, I can. So if I want to do it, I can. And that's really up to me now. And
that's
really
cool.
But right now, I'm not in the mood of actually, going back to Germany. I really would like to stay here. But I have to finish my diploma thesis.
Ah.
And get my degree, and then, getting certain things settled until I really, can join the team. So.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you're studying computer science. You're getting a what? What level degree are you getting?
Yeah, it's in Germany, it's called a diploma.
Okay.
It's not exactly like a master's, but it's comparable to a master's.
Excellent. So you have to finish your thesis.
Exactly.
So
well, honestly, I even have to start it, but...
Well,
probably not to get the job, right? I think you're probably already taken care of there. It's for your own personal... You know, you want to have that diploma.
Yeah. It's actually part of the offer letter that you receive from Microsoft. So HR really wants to protect you about, you know, having your manager saying, well, you know, just stay here and, you know, just don't complete your degree. You don't need it here at Microsoft. So they put in the requirement that you actually have to finish your degree before you can join.
Yeah. Which I think, actually, to be honest with you, it's a very smart move, right?
It is.
Because you get to now, you have this experience of what it's like in the real world. And building products and shipping products for N number of customers. Now you can go back to the ivory tower, and really I would recommend having a lot of fun with your thesis and do something way out, man, that you really couldn't do in this kind of scenario at Microsoft.
Yeah.
Right on. And so, well, hey, congratulations.
Thanks.
Very, very cool feature. I'm looking forward to seeing it sometime in the future.
Exactly.
There's no guarantee. It may never show up.
Exactly.
But at least it's really cool, and you had a good... So, the internship program, you had fun for the summer in Redmond?
Absolutely. I mean, they really make it hard for you to decline the offer, so they really try very hard to make you, you know, having the best experience ever. So, for example, one thing is we have, you know, huge amounts of events and parties, and you'll get lots of incentive from Microsoft, so yeah, it's a really cool experience.
Absolutely. And... you know, for everyone else out there, you know, give a shot at interning. I mean, we have another guy here. We have actually several Niners now, but, you know, little guru on the line.
Exactly, Christian Leesberg.
He's now, you know, pedal to the metal. I've seen him. It was funny. I was laughing because, you know, he's so busy right now because the product that he's working on, you know, it's getting close. And, you know, he's had bags under his eyes and he's not sleeping a lot. So I was like, welcome to Microsoft, buddy.
Yeah.
But, that's how it works, man.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you for coming on Channel 9, and congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me here.
Of course. Take care, man.